Welcome to the Fly Guides Podcast, a place where we tell the stories of the guides who make fly fishing the incredible experience it is all around the globe. Each week, your hosts, Scott Nielsen and Aaron Everett, will be bringing you the tales from the waters and the people who make fly fishing experiences come to life. Tune in to hear about the amazing people, places, and habitats that make fly fishing the most beautiful and unique sport in the world. And now for this week's podcast, here are your hosts, Scott and Aaron.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Fly Guides Podcast. We're super thrilled tonight to have Isaiah Smith with us. He's a guy that we fished with in February up in Glenwood on the Colorado. And just a wonderful guy, really fun, great, fantastic fisherman and a great guide. And we thought it'd be really great because one of the conversations we had on the boat was both about his life kind of in the mountains of Colorado, but also his desire to do saltwater stuff down in New Orleans and that area. So we thought it'd be great to have him on. So Isaiah, thanks for coming on tonight. Really glad to have you with us.
Hey, thanks for having me, Scott and Aaron. This is going to be fun, man.
Yeah, welcome.
Welcome. It's great to have you. So, hey, tell us a little bit as we get out of the gate, like how did you get into fly fishing and then how did you get into fly fish guiding?
Well, long story short, getting into fly fishing, the first time I trout fished, I used, the spinning gear where you can put the bubble and you can throw a fly out there.
Yep.
I forget what they're called, but we did that and I thought it was so cool and I thought the flies were so cool. And I was like, maybe we should just try to fly fish, you know? So I kind of taught myself to fly fish, essentially. And then getting into guiding, I grew up in Missouri. So my background is fishing catfish and bass and panfish. And I did that all summer, every summer as a kid. You know, we had a pond at my grandpa's house that we actually all built. And we, of course, there were people there with equipment that helped to build it. But it was a nice, acre pond with big catfish and bluegill. And that, that was my weekend and my summer for as long as I can remember. So fishing has kind of always been something that came natural or something that I was interested in. And I picked up fishing when I moved out here to Colorado. I transferred schools out here to CMU in Grand Junction. And there's a lot of fly fishing out here. And I kind of just started fishing around and made my way up the valley a little more and found Newcastle and was kind of introduced to all this cool water.
Yeah.
And also introduced to some really cool people and was kind of given the opportunity to guide, just through some mutual friends. And started guiding in 2020. And here we go, 2024, still love it. And still trying to figure out how to keep getting better at it,
That's awesome. That's awesome. So you you fish with a couple of different people in Glenwood in that area in terms of shops and stuff. Hardcore is one of them, but also hookers, other places that you go there. Like how you said 2020, you kind of got involved in it. Like
to get involved, right?
Yeah, kind of a weird time to get involved. But it's interesting. I've always wanted to ask a guide, like, that first time you take somebody down the river, what is that like? Like you're on the hook.
Oh my God. You're terrified. Your first trip.
Yeah.
Your first trip. You don't start out in the boat, right? You usually start out on a wade trip or something like that.
Yeah.
Even that's terrifying, but it's just, it just feels like a lot of pressure. You just want to catch fish and you just want to help these people to catch fish. And prove that you're worthy to continue to, run trips for an outfit. And, it's like terrifying in a good way, because then when you start catching fish, everyone's happy and you loosen up a little bit. And, I still remember my first couple of trips. I was really scared.
I've taken our friends down the Big Horn or whatever. And the whole time I'm like, oh man, I suck at this. This is terrible. I'm going to crash into everything. Well, and like,
you can't tell people that it's your, this is my first guide. Because then they're like, oh, this is who they set me up with,
So what do they think of me?
I'm maybe showing a little white lie here and there, Yeah, this is my second season, whatever. But it's a pretty scary experience. But it makes you learn real quickly, It kind of throws you into the fire and it's time to fish and it's time to guide.
That's awesome.
You pick up on it.
Yeah. So Isaiah, tell us a little bit about the waters that you guide on.
Yeah, I fish mainly the Colorado and of course the Roaring Fork too. So you guys had Shelby on last week. That's one of my best friends, and we fish together a lot, and we fish a lot of the same waters. I've pretty much fished the Colorado from Grizzly Creek or up in Glenwood Canyon all the way down to about Silt. You know, you can fish below Silt, but water gets a little different down there. And the Roaring Fork, you know, pretty much from Aspen all the way down to Glenwood Springs is such an amazing fishery. And, you know, sometimes we'll do trips up on the Eagle River. That's what's kind of cool about living in this area. You have so many, dude, there's so many fisheries here, you know, whether it's the tailwater or the freestones, the little tributaries. I mean, we have so much water to fish and guide on. So it's fun to bounce around and go to new places. And sometimes you have to kind of pull a string out of the hat to find clean water to fish around here, you know?
Yeah. That was interesting. That was something that impressed me about the conversation with Shelby. It was like, and I know that place really well. I mean, I love it there. It's like Glenwood's a second home to me, and it's just, it's a wonderful place. But you know, every time we come up, it's like, river's muddy, or, you know, or this is that, this is, oh man, canyon's closed or whatever.
There's right? always just something, man. Ever since that fire, and the mudslide the very next year.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems like the Colorado is, we call it moody, you know, I mean, if it rains or maybe they're doing work in the canyon, there's a push of water somewhere. It's just kind of moody and, but we still love it. You know, we've kind of worked our way around it, and we fish dirtier water than people think you should fish. And, we have a good time.
the Colorado is the classic trophy wife.
Beautiful.
Yes. Yeah. So Isaiah, tell us a little bit about, like, what does a typical season look like for you? Are you fishing all year round, or do you have some kind of downtime, or what does that look like for you?
I kind of slow down in the winter, you know, by the end of October and going into November. It depends on the year and what the weather's like. But typically going into November, we're not really running many trips. You certainly can still fish around here, but we just don't do as much business. And I kind of fish the spring window that we have. You know, you guys got a part of February there. So February, pretty much up until runoff, which is now, and kind of started late April this year. And then we kind of have the runoff period, which will last, you know, a month or so, sometimes mid-June, sometimes late June. It just kind of depends on the year. And then we get to work, you know, late June all the way through October, pretty much full pull, you know. And kind of, you kind of have three windows. You know, that's spring, summer, and fall. And of course, you can fish winter. But as far as guiding, I'm not running that many trips in the winter.
You're skiing because the skiing's really good.
I work at Aspen Mountain the last two winters, and that's been fun. But I really have a passion for guiding and fishing, so I'm, you know, kind of getting into saltwater guiding and pushing for that, and just kind of keeping it seasonal here and then seasonal wherever I decide to saltwater guide, which is looking like Louisiana.
So how did you get into that? Is it like something that you kind of stumbled into, or you have a passion for the saltwater stuff?
Well, I started saltwater fly fishing a couple years ago. I went to Honduras for the first time. We have a buddy that owns and operates a lodge out there, Flyfish Guanaja. And I mean, coming from fishing trout and bass and catfish, when we went out there on the Pangas and we fished, I was like, oh no, this is really what I want to do, you know? And certainly Louisiana isn't Honduras, but just the feeling of poling a boat and kind of strictly sight fishing and hunting fish. It's a little different than guiding trout on the river, you know? And so I started fishing Honduras. Again, just kind of through great friends and making connections with people. I went to Mexico, and then kind of Louisiana was the one thing that seems achievable, right? Like I can make that transformation into fishing here in the spring, summer, and fall, and then late fall through winter, I can fish Louisiana and guide out there for big redfish. And it's just something, I think it's more my passion for guiding and seeing fish that kind of makes me want to do that and continue to truly be that year-round guide. You know, I want to be the old crusty guy that guides 275, 300 days a year, you know, and that's kind of my lifestyle.
Flip palette, right? Like, just, yeah, totally get it.
I mean,
like,
whatever I can do to just be out there and just see
beyond
some
the water.
Of the cool things we get to see, you know.
Tell me about the redfish stuff, because I'm like totally fascinated by that. I have not done that, and everybody I've ever talked to says that's the most fun fish you'll ever catch.
I think it's the most fun because they're honest fish, right? I mean,
yeah.
They usually are going to eat your fly unless they get too close to the boat. And too close to the boat for those fish seem to be, you know, 10 to 20 feet, you know, which is really, I mean, that's off your rod,
really fun.
Then, right? So,
yeah.
It's just fun to get a fish that, and especially after trying saltwater fishing in the flats for the first time, permit and bonefish,
yeah,
spookier fish. It was really refreshing to go to Louisiana and be able to throw maybe not a so great cast at a fish and still get an eat, you know? It's just really cool. And, you know, when the big bulls come in late in the fall in October, November, I mean, you get to see these big schools of fish and, it's just so cool, man. The element of sight fishing and be able to watch something happen, whether you catch the fish or not, that's just kind of what drove me to Louisiana. And so, when you see their giant mouth open up and eat your shrimp pattern, it's just like, oh God, this is really happening, you know?
So what kind of setups are you guys using for the redfish stuff? I mean, obviously, you know, trout fishing is very different than that.
I mean,
sort of setup.
9 and 10 weights, you know, and just typical kind of floating lines, and leaders are pretty straight to the point, you know, not a super long leader. I guess it depends on the situation, right? Like any fishing is totally situational, but pretty short leaders and shrimp, crab patterns, bait fish imitations. Just really cool stuff. And most of the time they're willing to eat, you know?
Yeah. What a fun deal, man. I've tried it one time and I went with a really fantastic guide. I've told the story a bunch, but everything's the wrong instinct for me, because all I've ever done in my life is trout fish. And so everything is just backwards. Like, it just feels so there, you know, I was tarpon fishing and you end up like trying to set the hook like a trout and the whole thing explodes. The whole thing's a disaster. Nothing works. And you're like, oh, what the hell was that?
It's such a big learning curve, you know, and obviously I'm learning and always learning. And, I mean, once the guides yell at you enough out there, you start to fix it a little bit and maybe focus a little more, you know, but that's kind of part of it that keeps it fun. Cause you're always trying to improve and get better at something. And what I want to get better at is fly fishing and guiding, you know? So it's
for me,
the challenge is kind of fun, you know, and saltwater isn't easy, whether you're fishing redfish, tarpon, bonefish, whatever it is, it's typically not easy, you know. There's always wind, there's always all these factors, you might not find fish. So it's kind of cool to put, you know, all kind of different aspects of guiding and fishing together, and it's time to go.
Do you find a lot of crossover? Obviously in Colorado we're just, you know, mostly fishing for trout. You know, there's some other species you could go after, but do you find a lot of crossover, you know, between trout guiding and, you know, going down to the saltwater stuff? What's that similarity look like? Or is it two different ball games?
It's so different, right? So so the difference really is just the fishing, you know. It's the clientele is the same, the goal is the same, is to help people catch fish, and we're looking for fish, and we're trying to accomplish this mission. But as far as the fishing, you know, kind of with trout fishing, they're between this bank and this bank, and in Louisiana or the marsh or any saltwater situation, you look at the map and they could be anywhere, you know, and you just kind of It takes a little more brain power, I think, to saltwater guide.
It's a lot more challenging. Just fish in a barrel, kind of.
And I think you have so many more variables now. You know, you're playing tides, you're playing moon phase, wind. You know where the sun is, so you don't get a glare on the water, so you can actually see fish. There's so many different things that you're trying to take into consideration just to find a fish or two, you know.
Yeah, it's always felt way more like, Scott was just saying, it's way more like hunting than it is the traditional trout fishing, which is just like you're casting to a location. Typically, you kind of guess that the trout will be in a space because whatever the current, the rock, the structure, whatever it is, you kind of know where they'll be. And the time I went, it was like, oh my gosh, this is like, I got to go find them. I got to go look for them. And
it's mind blowing. You know,
you're standing on the front. And you're like, oh, this could be an 8-hour day and I'm just standing here. I don't know. You may not see a thing.
You might not see a fish. And it's fun, man. It's just also just seeing another aspect of fishing and guiding and being able to actually see fish before you cast at them and see the way that they react to flies or they react to this or that. It's just so cool, you know, and you get to learn so much. Yeah. And then you're just out in nature, just like we are here on the river. You know, you get to look around and fishing might be a little slow, but you look around and you're still happy just to be out on the water and, you know, doing whatever you think is best to try to find fish, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. It's
so,
really cool.
So Isaiah, talk us a little bit about your clientele. What does that look like? Is it, kind of repeat people or the, you know, people that are just calling off the shelf and saying, hey, we're looking for a guy book of clients.
Well, luckily through the outfit I work for, mainly Harcourt Fly Fishing, Dustin, my boss, has been a guide here for 30 years, you know, in the Valley. And he's well established, you know, as you can imagine guiding for 30 years. And he has a lot of clients that do these group trips, you know, and bring multiple boats. And so luckily over the last 3, going on 4 years now, I've kind of gained some of my own clients. And then I'm also involved in those group trips. It's pretty cool. I get a lot of repeat clients. And then of course we still have cold calls and fresh people that come in. You know, it takes so long to build that book where you can, you know, like Dustin, he'll book out a year in advance, you know, with 10 to 15 people and he's done for the year, you know, so it takes a long time to build that. And I think that's what every guide, or at least that's what I'm, you know, hoping to do. It just takes time to build that book.
Yeah, it's really cool to see. You know, it's cool to see, we've talked to guides that have been, you know, guiding for 30 plus years and, you know, guys like you that are, you know, kind of getting into the game and just seeing how you guys navigate that, building up your book of business. And like we said at the beginning, you know, Aaron and I guided with you or went on a guided trip with you, you know, earlier in the year, in the spring and had a fantastic time. And, you know, you're one of those guys that's like, man, we'll be back. We'll definitely fish with you again.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was fun.
Absolutely, absolutely. So,
Shelby. Shelby's great. Right? he took our idiot friends down the river. No,
We got to go with the good guide.
We got to go with the good guy, catch a lot of fish, and watch those guys struggle. No, that's not true.
Yeah, that was so fun, man.
So how do you, I'm always curious, you know, if you have somebody that's brand new to fly fishing, maybe it's their first time on a boat, first time fly fishing, you know, how do you approach that? Because it's, you know, there's so many variables. Obviously fly fishing is, it's not always beginner friendly. There's a lot to learn, you know, a lot to, you know, from casting and, you know, figuring out where fish are to being on a boat, you know, that's certainly something new and unique. And, so how do you approach that? I'm always curious about that.
Very gently. you ask a lot of questions, you know. I mean, you got to get a gauge on the people that you're fishing with. And some people just want to try it for the day. Some people want to get better at it. And so you kind of gauge that and you give them what you think is going to be best for them. You know, some people you have to push into it and you kind of have to get after them and stay on them.
Like Aaron.
And you know, if they want to learn. and you know, the first couple years I started guiding, I got used to having, because I mentioned my boss's clients and some of those group trips, you get good anglers that have been coming out here and fishing these rivers longer than I've been a guide here, you know, so you kind of get spoiled in a sense. And then you get a newbie and maybe you get frustrated. And I had to kind of I had to change the way I thought about that and be grateful that you get new people, because one, you're getting to introduce somebody new to the sport. And then two, I mean, that's our whole job, is to guide and teach, you know. It doesn't say, you know, expert anglers only. And my, you know, it does, we have, that's right. Our job is to guide and teach. So you have to kind of take pride in the new anglers. And then you do get that factor where if it's their first time floating down a river, they might have some lower expectations, you know, and it might only take a fish or two to please them, you know, and, you know, you just kind of work with them and talk to them, and communication is key for me, you know, for like a guide angler relationship. We're going to talk, and we're going to figure out what our goals are and what we want to achieve here. And just so we can all have fun, you know, and nobody's stressing or whatever it is. We just all want to be on the same page, team effort. And that's what I always tell my guys out there.
Yeah. So in relationship to that, like, let's say you get a call, somebody you don't know, and they're like, "Hey, I'm coming to Glenwood, Aspen, whatever. I want to try fly fishing. You know, I fly fish. I'm from Vermont, and I fly fished a bunch or whatever." How do you pick where you want to take somebody to showcase the best fishing in that valley? Because it's unbelievable. There's so much stuff and so much water.
You kind of read out your anglers, and if it's a repeat client, you know, you got somebody that knows what to expect from you, and they've been to every section on the Colorado, and we fish the fork. Then we kind of ask them, you know, we're like, what do you feel like doing? You know, and we, of course, there are certain sections at certain times that fish way better than others. And at the end of the day, you just want to go and put people on fish. Okay. So you kind of base it on what's fishing the best. And then after that, I would say kind of their skill level, you know, like, look, do you want to go maybe to a different section and fish for some bigger fish? We might not see as many, but we could try this. Or would you rather go, you know, up top and catch quite a few fish? We know they're happy up there. And it's that's kind of a fun part of it. And that's what's really cool about having so many fisheries around. Because when everything's running clean, I mean, God, you have so many options.
That's crazy.
And it's just so fun. You know?
Miles of river, it feels like. I mean, it's really it's incredible.
So tell us a little bit about the unique, you know, sort of challenges. Obviously, you know, you're mainly fishing the Colorado, a lot of stretches there, the Roaring Fork, two pretty different rivers, you know, pretty drastically.
Yeah.
Pretty different fisheries. What do the challenges look like throughout the year? I know there's, you know, mentioned the mudslides and the, you know, the flooding, the fires, you know, that sort of stuff. Yeah. So what do the challenges look like for each of those rivers?
Well, you know, it's always dependent on what happens, you know, whether we get a lot of rain or God forbid, you know, there's a fire somewhere. And, it's interesting, you know, it kind of keeps you on your toes, and it gets you really good at checking flow charts and checking turbidity numbers and all these things on your phone, you know, like every single morning. I mean, it's been kind of typical the last 2 years. Luckily, we've just had kind of our standard runoff period, late spring, you know, kind of May into June. And we've been able to fish through the summers, haven't had any hot water temps, which, you know, and the first couple of years I started guiding here, August was hot, you know, low water years. And I think water temps were 70 degrees on the Colorado. When the mudslide happened, they went up to like 72, 73. Yeah. It was really crazy, you know? So, there are definitely some challenges of kind of guiding and fishing and being, I kind of love the Colorado River. So sometimes I'll force it, you know, it's really interesting. But like I said, you know, we had a couple of falls that we've fished pretty dirty water and figure it out there. Those fish got to eat, you know. So
what's your favorite stretch of the Colorado?
Well,
no secrets given away.
You don't have to.
I do like fishing the lower Colorado quite a bit. Don't always guide down there, but I do fish personally down there a lot. But my favorite stretch to guide on the Colorado is probably, just like Shelby said, probably just that two rivers down to Dino, you know, and it's so consistent. And then in the winter, sometimes that's your only option because they close South Canyon Boat Ramp. And that's a great middle point. So when South Canyon Boat Ramp's open, I float a lot going from there all the way down to Newcastle. And That's an easy whole day stretch, and you get some different water than what's featured in the canyon there, coming Two Rivers to Dino. But yeah, most consistent and probably the most I guide is coming down from Glenwood down here in Newcastle.
So for folks that are listening that may not be familiar with, you know, the Colorado, what does that kind of stretch look like? I mean, fishable, you know, stuff that you can float. I know obviously the Colorado, you know, starts way up in Rocky Mountain National Park. You guys are fishing kind of Glenwood Canyon down. What's the kind of mile stretch, and what is the sort of, you know, floatable, fishable water look like on that river?
Like what would be like the total, you're saying?
Yeah, yeah.
Or how many miles is that stretch you like to fish,
Well, I don't know. I mean, you get a full day, you get 12. We got a couple sections that are 10, 12 miles. You know, some of the lower river stuff that I like to fish. And then kind of same with Glenwood there, coming down Glenwood to Dino. That's, I believe that's getting close to 9 miles there. And the cool thing is we have all these boat ramps, right, on the Colorado, Two Rivers, South Canyon when it's open, which is usually all season. They close it during the winter because there's a steep grade at the boat ramp. And then you've got Dino or Tibbetts, the truck stop there, Newcastle, Silt, Rifle. I mean, it just keeps going. And so you have all these little sections you can pick out, and you can kind of combo some sections together and make a new one, you know, and start here, start there. It's just so fun, you know?
Yeah.
And I mean, there's from Glenwood down to kind of where we stop fishing, you know, there's 50, 70 miles of good fishable water.
That's incredible.
You know, and it's just a matter of getting out there and trying it and fishing it. And that's all it is.
Where does that tail off? I know, you know, eventually it kind of gets muddy. Where does that kind of, you know, end for sort of fishing? I know you can probably fish pretty far down, but what does that look like?
Well, most people don't go down past Rifle, you know, it can get really dirty down there. Yeah, most people don't go below Rifle. You know, we float down there a little bit, but it's a totally different fishery. It's big and slow water, and fish sit in certain spots, and it's not for everybody.
Catching spoonbill or something silly down there.
Catching a lot of chubs and sucker fish. You know, not a lot of trout, you know.
Right. I want to just go right back to sort of the Louisiana conversation. I think when we were on the boat together, you talked about getting your captain's license and doing some stuff down there to be able to get guiding by next season. So, tell me a little bit about, like, why'd you land on Louisiana? What's kind of interesting about that situation, and why do you think that's like your winter? You know, I know you work at Aspen and do snowboarding and a bunch of stuff. So like, why? I know you love fishing, maybe a little bit more than than all that winter stuff. So like, why?
Oh, I love it.
Why Louisiana?
Well, you know, like I said, when I first started saltwater fly fishing, it was first in the flats. You know, we were fishing bonefish and permit, and I've seen all these videos of tarpon fishing and all this crazy clear water and all this cool stuff, fish tailing. And so I was like, well, you know, the only place in the States would be kind of Florida to guide something like that. And I don't know if a rookie guide could go in Florida right now and start a career there. You know, there's so many people down there. And so that, you know, that was my first idea, and it kind of faded out. And then I started hearing and thinking about Louisiana. And I went and fished it, and I was just sold, you know, right then and there. I was like, this can happen here. You know, there's not as many guides. There's not people running over every spot or pushing people out of spots. It actually would give you an opportunity to go out and learn the fishery better for yourself, you know, and for your clients. And it's not that far from Colorado. You know, we just make a drive down to New Orleans and head a little south from there, and we're there, you know?
Yeah. That's super interesting. Market dynamics is still in existence in fly fishing, right? Like, you pick a place that isn't desaturated, and that means that maybe the fishing's, you know, different or more attractive in Florida, but you can't compete because there's just, you know, it's oversaturated with guides, and that's super interesting.
And I'm the type of guide, like, I'm I'm not running over anybody's spot. You know, if somebody said one thing to me out there, like, you know, this is my spot, you know, I'd feel horrible about it. I'm not going to fight back. You know, I got a lot of respect for, you know, this is only my fourth season guiding coming up here. So I've got a ton of respect for veteran guides and people that have been doing this way longer for me. So Florida just seemed, I guess intimidating is the best way to say it. And I just really didn't feel like it was that achievable. You know, I didn't feel like I was setting myself up for success if I tried to go to the freaking Florida Keys and become a fishing guide, you know, like, it's like, dude, there's 500 of us, you know? So, yeah, I just think Louisiana is more achievable and the fishing is, I mean, you're not looking at bonefish and permit tailing, but you have giant redfish that want to eat your fly. And sometimes you see these giant schools of fish and Jack Crevalle out there. There's all kinds of stuff you can fish for. And it's just, it's fun, you know. It's still inshore flats fishing. You're still fishing. You're still sight fishing. You're still hunting and looking for a fish. And, you know, it's pretty epic.
Yeah, New Orleans is picky, you know? Pretty sweet city anyways. There's like lots of great stuff going on down there, that's for sure.
Sure.
So Isaiah, what is I know you touched on a little bit there, but you know, the camaraderie amongst fly fishing guides, what does that look like for you? I know there's you know, obviously quite a few in Colorado. We talked about Shelby, you guys are good buddy. He's another guide on, you know, that same region that you're at, but what does that look like for you? Yeah.
It's cool, man. It's especially, it all still feels fresh to me, you know. Like I keep saying, it's only going into my fourth season, and so, and it's all gone by, and you know, the snap of a finger, it's been so fast. So I've been able to meet a lot of the veteran guides, just kind of being out on the water. I kind of got thrown to the fire and guiding quickly, you know. I was given a lot of trips pretty quick, So, you know, people start to see you out there on the river and recognize you. I'm a little bit of a minority in the guide community here. And so kind of easily recognizable. And yeah, dude, there's so many amazing, you know, we call them OG guides, but there's so many just guides that are veterans here that have been doing it for so long. And if, you know, you play it cool and you make friends with everybody and try to take a piece of everybody's, you know, kind of watch what everyone's doing out there and take a piece and put it in your game. And it's all love and respect, you know, and we've got a cool kind of core group of guide buddies that we just fish with and kind of work with. And our group's great, but we extend out and we love to see everybody at the boat ramp, you know, no problems over here.
Yeah.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Especially being new to guiding, you know, it seems like it's a pretty welcoming community, and I know easily, you know, some of those older guys could be pretty crotchety, but it sounds like they're pretty welcoming and, you know, wanting to share knowledge.
It kind of seems like if you give them a reason to be that way to you, then they'll do it.
But
kind of keep your head down and work, and definitely don't cut anybody off or yell at them on the river, you know, and Just be friendly and smile at the boat ramp. Don't take too long putting your boat in or getting it out. Yes. There's a few things that, you know, that you can do to make sure it's a more welcoming experience.
Yeah, absolutely. Quickly learn the etiquette of what to do or not to do and not piss anybody off too badly. So what are your off days look like? Yeah, we're always curious, you know, you're obviously on the water all day. You know, do you find yourself fishing a lot on your off time? What does that look like for you?
Yeah. So days off during the season, especially like July through October, are pretty rare. I tend to kind of have weekends off here and there. The weekends are nice to have off because you get so much traffic coming down from Denver or wherever it might be. You know, more guides are out running trips, so it can be a really busy river, so having that Saturday, Sunday off can be nice. But at the same time, I usually get talked into doing a trip on one of those days. But yeah, days off during the season, as crazy as it is, we're out there fishing for ourselves.
You know? That's awesome. Yeah,
we're out there trying to have a little bit of fun too, and at the very least, we're just kind of seeing some buddies out there that might be guiding that day. Going back to the camaraderie thing, and sometimes it can be pretty entertaining to just kind of see what goes on a Saturday, you know, in July on the river. So, yeah, I mean, I definitely get out and fish as much as I can. I really enjoy you know, getting out, getting a little run in here and there, doing a little bit of workout. But my life pretty much revolves around the river. And
nice.
Right now, you know, I've got a little time off. I'm getting ready to go to Key West and fish tarpon. And so, you know, a lot of days I'm practicing casting and just trying to kind of enjoy the downtime while I have it. Because, you know, once we get to middle of June, it's going to be on.
Well, Aaron and I didn't get the invite, so we're still waiting for that. So we could.
Well, I'll talk to Shelby about that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's good.
And do you find yourself fishing are you fishing on the Colorado? Not asking for your secret spots or anything, but are you fishing the Colorado or the Fork? Are you getting on, you know, different water in the area? Like we said, that valley is just chock full of streams. So, you know,
yeah, I mean, sometimes on the day off, we might choose to do a little different mission. You know, we might not go the most popular stretch in what we've been guiding. We might choose to go hunt for a big fish. We might choose to go carp fish. You know, if it's warm enough, kind of late July, going into August, we can go up high and fish, you know, some of the high alpine stuff and catch cutties and brook trout. And, there's so many options. But a lot of times we are just staying in the boat and trying to go do some research and development maybe for the next day, you know?
Yeah. I'm always amazed about the diversity of water within 20 miles of that place. I mean, it's
crazy.
It's nuts. I mean, you can, like you said, you could fish for carp, you could fish for suckers and bullheads if you want, but like great world-class trout fishing, you know, cutthroats, rainbows, you can find anything you want to find. You can find high mountain streams. You can find high mountain lakes. You can find just creek. It's
tiny little creeks. Yeah.
This area of Colorado, and I mean, even this area, I'm saying, you know, is a big generalization, but even going all the way down to like Grand Junction, even past Grand Junction down to Delta, you know, you start to be able to fish the Gunnison down there. There is just fishing everywhere, and I feel like kind of Glenwood, Newcastle, it's a good kind of central area to be easy access to all of those spots. You know, you go an hour, a couple hours each way, you're going to find something to fish.
Yeah, it's really awesome. Yeah, it's really good. So kind of my last question for you as we kind of wrap up the show tonight, like tell me if you had a dream sort of life you could construct for yourself, what would that look like so that you're, you know, you're doing the thing you love the most all the time in fishing.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I'm not too far off from living it. I mean, I love guiding, dude. And that's kind of where I'm at right now. And I'm just chasing this thing of trying to be the best guide I can be here in the saltwater. And I'm kind of hoping one day I could do something outside of the U.S., you know, maybe own a lodge somewhere, maybe open a new fishery that hasn't been fished before, that's getting really rare, you know, as big as the world is, there's very few remote places that haven't been fished left. And that's kind of always been my goal. But for now, I think just being a fishing guide and doing the Louisiana thing, and that's kind of my calling. And that alone is such a big platform to make an impact on so many other things, you know? Yeah. So just pushing to be the best guide I can be. And I don't feel like I'm going to stop guiding ever, you know, maybe one day, hopefully one day I can fish a little more than guide, but like we say, you know, I'm kind of fishing through the clients and fishing through whoever's in the boat there. And that's good enough for me a lot of times.
Yeah, that's great.
So Isaiah, one final question for me is what's been your craziest day on the river? Any wild stories or crazy mishaps or even just crazy days of like epic fishing or?
Yeah, I mean, not to scare people away from getting in my boat, but you know, sometimes stuff happens on the river.
Yes.
Sometimes you might lose an oar. Sometimes your oar lock might come out. You know, there's sometimes you might have to get out of the boat and run down your oar. There's been a lot of cool things and crazy things that have happened out there. And I would say, honestly, though, if we're just talking about fishing itself, the craziest thing that has ever happened that I've seen, we were fishing the Fork, you know, there below Iron Bridge, and kind of doing laps on this hole. We were catching fish all day, but we caught a small, you know, as you do, you can catch some small browns on the fork from time to time. Caught a small brown on the nymph rod, you know, throwing the bobber, and everything was fine. And all of a sudden, her rod, you know, I'm watching the girl's rod in the front of my boat, all of a sudden just kind of goes straight down, like,
whoa,
in the middle of the river. And, you know, and I was like, that fish wasn't very big, was it? And, you know, no, I don't think so. It was a small one. I was like, yeah, I thought so. And she gets a little closer and closer, and I stand up, and there's a giant, giant rainbow with the little, you know, the little 8-inch, 10-inch brown trout in its mouth. And it's at this point, it's kind of halfway out of its mouth. And we can't do anything. We're fishing a 10-foot five weight. You have no backbone to pull on the fish. So she's just kind of holding it there, and I'm standing up, you know, looking at the fish, and just keep doing what you're doing, reel it, you know, reel it. A long story short, we didn't land this fish, but it had this little trout inhaled the whole fight, and finally it wore through. You know, we're using like 5X this time of year. I think it was maybe July or even August, and dude, eventually it wore through, and it's, you know, but every time I got up to look at the fish, it had the small fish farther into its mouth until it finally disappeared, you know, and I was like, what the hell just happened? Because I've seen big fish chase small fish around when you got them hooked, and I've seen that before, but this fish was one of the, I mean, biggest fish I've seen on the river. And we were so close to landing a few times, had it up, coming up to the surface, and just couldn't, you have no leverage, you know. It doesn't have a hook in its mouth. It's holding on to a string. It's like, just try to keep them on.
That's the strangest double of all time.
The craziest story.
That's incredible. That's awesome.
Oh, that's cool. So, well, yeah, man, I can't tell you thanks enough for being on the show. I would love to know how people could get a hold of you if they wanted to guide, or, you know, take a guided trip with you, both between here, Louisiana, whatever it is. You know, we never know what the reach is, but tell us how people can get a hold of you on Instagram or other social stuff.
Yeah, I'll be honest. I mean, getting a hold of me best is probably going to my Instagram or my Facebook. And I mean, you can add me as a friend on Facebook or follow me on Instagram. It's Isaiah Smith Fly Fishing. And I'm sure, you know, that my name will be in the podcast title, so you'll know how to spell my name. But Instagram is kind of the best way to get a hold of me. And of course, we have a website, Harcourt Fly Fishing. And you can call Hooker's Fly Shop and get a hold of me. And I'm easy to find, man.
Yeah. No, I love your, and it's a great account to follow. Cause like even the other day I was like, oh man, he's fishing up there and it's like tea water, but it looks so fun. And there's like, it's really, it's great to follow. And you really are a fabulous guy. Like, we had a great time fishing with you, and it's, I can't wait to fish with you. I can't wait to fish with you in Louisiana, man. Like, it's on my list of things to go do.
Yes, when you get please, your captain's license. Please let us know when you're down there. Cause we'll be one of your first clients.
Yes, I can't wait. Yeah. I cannot wait, man.
It's really good. Well, hey,
I appreciate you guys. That was awesome, and it's cool to just kind of talk fishing, you know, with somebody else other than just the buddies all the time. So yeah, that was great, and I really appreciate it.
Well, you guys do such cool stuff, and you make a lot of people's days really fantastic. And I think most people don't really tell this story because it's kind of this weird, like, strange space that nobody really talks about. But I mean, every time we've been on the water, you know, guides make the day. Yeah. They make the day so much more fun. They make so much about fishing, you know, whether it's an educational situation or whether it's just sort of this kind of, you know, just a fabulous day, lots of fun, lots of conversations, lots of really cool stuff that's going on the boat. I don't think you guys get enough credit for what you do to make fly fishing such a special sport. I mean, it's my favorite sport in the world. I mean, I say that when it's fly fishing season, and then I say that about skiing too, but you know, it's my favorite sport in the whole world is go fly fishing. I love it. And I've learned so much from guides over the course of my life. You know, I'm almost 50 years old.
Right.
I love being with a guide because every time I'm with somebody, it's like, oh man, I didn't know that that's how you would do that. Or I didn't even think about that kind of thing. And every water's so different, everything's so unique. And so that's what we're trying to do is tell stories of people and folks like yourself that are out there just doing this really cool thing, you know, like you're trout fishing all summer, and then you're going to go down and do flats fishing in the winter. And like, you just, a guy that loves fishing, like what a really cool deal.
such a lucky guy, man. It's so cool. And I'm just lucky to have the passion for it that I do, you know, and just to come back to fishing after a lot of years of not fishing, it was just like, wow, this is actually, I think, what I'm supposed to be doing, you know, and, and now I'm getting somewhere. So yeah, man, can't thank you guys enough. That was sweet.
That's great. Well, hey, have a great night and thanks so much for talking with us. And we'll look forward to being on the water with you again.
Yeah, sweet. See you guys. Thank you.
See you later.